The secret of life is being thankful. Thank you, David. Thank you, guys. So, thank you for choosing to be here today. I watched this talk dance rather radically on me yesterday as I was working on it, and I watched it do it again this morning. So, it's going to be fun to see what happens. Back when I was coming up with the talk titles a month or so ago, sometimes I hit a day and I don't know what I'm going to do with the day. So I look and see what happened in history on that particular day, maybe thinking there's going to be some inspiration there. Well, on this day in history, since I didn't put this in big type, I get to put my glasses on so I can see it. On this day in history, Sesame Street premiered in 1969. Yay! Pearl Buck won the Nobel Prize for Literature for her book, The Good Earth, in 1938. German citizens began demolishing the Berlin Wall in 1989. The first motorcycle was unveiled in 1885. And René Descartes dreamt the dream that inspired his philosophical treatise, which resulted in I Think, Therefore I Am, in 1619. What a lovely setup for we plant our own seeds. Because every one of those ideas came from a thought and a decision that then became something that became real or turned into form in our language. So I'm going to be talking a lot today about how we choose our ideas and how they become form when we are consistent in our thinking and our remembering and our perceiving and so on and so on to our experience. So I want you to take the white insert that Shelley was talking about a minute ago and flip it over to the notes page. Those of you who have been around a while or back will recognize this little crudely drawn symbol at the top. Those of you who have not been around a while, this may be new to you. This is called the cycle of experience. You could also call it the cycle of decision, the cycle of perception, the cycle of, I can't even read it, perspective, the cycle of definitions. Basically, it's the cycle of the way we create our lives. And every single point of this circle is an entry point. So today, I'm going to be talking about how everyone lives inside this circle and how every one of us has a chance to make a change in how we interact with our lives if we don't like what we're experiencing. Okay? That's what we're going to do today. And how on earth does gratitude fit that? Duh. If we are thankful and grateful for our lives, odds are really good we're going to have a better quality of life. This is not a mystery. It's just a fact. So therein lies the connection between gratitude and we plant our own seeds and how does gratitude become us? We become grateful and our life becomes better. This is not rocket science, right? And it's easy to forget, and it's easy to, you know, like get pulled off the road and fall in a hole. And we do that too. So this idea that we plant our own seeds is not unique to science of mind. However, it is a basic tenet of our belief system. We recognize that we create our reality, and it starts with what we decide is true for us. And one of the places it shows up in other people's belief systems is the prayer of Saint Francis, which wasn't written by Saint Francis. Grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to console, not to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love, for it is in giving that we receive and in pardoning that we are pardoned, and so on. So it's not a unique idea to science of mind, and yet it is a basic principle of how we work our lives. It is what we give out, what we decide, what we enliven and embody, that becomes what is true and effective and, what's the word I want, activated in our lives. We can't plant radishes and get watermelons, even though both are red. If we plant radishes, we're gonna get radishes. If we plant loving thoughts and we actually truly believe we live in a loving world, like Wayne Dyer says, we have a loving world experience. If we believe the world is a yucky place, then guess what we get? Even when stuff happens that's not so joyful, we can choose to see it through the eyes of, oh, this is awful and terrible, and oh my God, the world is going to in a handbasket. Or we can choose to say, wow, this is an ugly thing that's happening, and give it no more thought than that. We plant our own seeds. We harvest what we plant. Yeah. I've already talked about that. So I have a dear friend who posted a video on Facebook yesterday. And she's a social worker by training, a therapist. And I didn't know until yesterday that she also suffers from a mild form of depression. But, she decided to let everybody in the world know this. And it's called dysthymia. And basically, the way she describes it is that her default setting is just a little bit south of normal. That her basic setting, her default position, is just a little bit unhappy. When she wakes up in the morning, that's where she wakes up. It's just, I have those moments, but I don't live there. And I can't imagine what it would be like to actually have the first thought I have in the morning when I wake up as, ooh. And yet, her point of view and the reason for making her video was to say, this is kind of like in the old parable in the New Testament in the Christian tradition, you plant seeds on the rocky ground, except in that story, you plant seeds on the rocky ground and you're screwed. In her story, you have to work harder to cultivate those seeds that are growing in rocky ground. Because she says her first act of the day is to talk herself out of bed and to decide that regardless of how she's feeling in that moment, she is not stuck living in that unhappy place. And she made a list of what she does every morning, or picks from, because she has a whole long list of choices that she picks from, and she keeps picking them until she finds one that works. She is actually working that circle. She is deciding that no matter what her base temperament is, she will not have a crappy day. Man, I'm glad I don't have to live that way, and I honor her because she is able to recognize she creates her reality and she makes herself do it most of the time. Sometimes she has a sick day. And, wow, just to be able to do it regularly is amazing to me. And one of the other things, actually, I'll go through her list first. What she has on her list of things she chooses in order to move herself from unhappy to okay, get a hold of this list, because it's the stuff that all of us recognize improve our own quality of lives, no matter where we start on that spectrum in the morning when we wake up. Get enough sleep. Yeah. Hydrate. Eat food that actually benefits you. Move, whether it's walking or dancing or whatever. Be out in nature. Get out in the sun, at least a little. Do things that feed your joy. Be around supportive, nurturing people. This is part of what spiritual community can do if you choose to engage in it. And then, my favorite one of her list, do whatever it is for you that nourishes your soul. Now, you got to figure out what that is, right? Because it's not evident. It's not obvious. It's not like there's a signpost that says, "Hi, your name is Judy, so your thing must be." No, everybody gets to discover for themselves what their nourishing acts, plural, are, and do them. So the other thing she said in her little video that I thought was tremendous was people use depression as a get-out-of-jail-free card. I'm depressed so I don't have to. And that's a choice. And it's not easy. Don't hear me say that it's easy, because it isn't. Every one of us has something in our history, our physiology, our biology, our stories we have that we all carry that tells us it's work to do this. And some days we're able to accomplish, and some days the stories win. That doesn't make us wrong or bad or faulty or flawed or deficient in any way. It makes us human. So remember that when you go, "Well, the story won today. Boom, you know, pity party me." No. Get up, try again, start over. That perpetual do-over that we live in as humans, we get to try again, regardless of what our default setting is. I wish I had something more pleasant to tell you than that. But truthfully, that's where we are. Because we each have that, whatever our default setting is. A couple of years ago, we did a class together on a book called The How of Happiness. The woman was a social scientist. And her point of view was interesting because she was talking about, and I don't remember exactly the numbers, but basically half of your ability to be happy was genetic, which meant half was up to you. So some people are generally happy. You know, they just wake up and they bounce like Tigger. But other people are more like Eeyore. And if they're going to move from Eeyore to happy, it takes work. But this woman, whose name was like 17, mostly consonants, started with an L, ended in a ski. She said, half of it is genetic. You can't change that. But half of it is not. So each of us, no matter where we are on that spectrum, has the ability to make a positive change if we choose. And good news, bad news, we have to choose. So we're back to planting seeds again. Do you want radishes? Do you want a happy experience? Do you want to have a positive, you know, bright and sunny day when you look out the window? What does it take for you to have that as your reality? The answer to that question is going to be totally personal. And probably you're going to need a whole bunch of choices to pick from. Because just like my friend with her dysthymia, everything isn't going to work equally on any given day. So we're going to need to have lots of ways to move ourselves from our default setting, whatever it is, to the experience we want to have. So, it's a little early to ask this question, but I'll go ahead and do it. What, think for a second, what can you do to improve your own quality of life? It's personal, and it will differ from day to day to day and season to season and cycle to cycle. Pay attention to what answer you get to that question. I want to tell a different story. I have a woman. I started to call her a friend, but she's not really a friend. She's just somebody I know pretty well. And she's a religious science minister. And she was off on a trip and she broke her ankle badly. Because she's a religious science minister, she decided she was going to heal it with prayer and intention. That lasted about a week. Finally, her partner drug her to the hospital, and she had emergency surgery because it was badly broken. Now, my point is doctors and surgery and pills and medication and all of that is in this thing we call mind. So we're not people who believe that you can heal everything with mind and anything that is medical is bad. God's in that too. That is part of what helps us have the life we choose. We get to use it all if it benefits us. Isn't that lovely? So this religious science minister has finally figured out that her need to have her ankle put back together with pins and rods, which it was that bad, what it was really about for her was she wasn't used to asking for help and letting people help her. Oh, that one. So she spent the last couple of weeks at home with her foot elevated and letting people help her. And so her worldview changed radically because she went from the one who always did, the one who only did, to being one who said, sure, you can make me a cappuccino or bring me books or make me lunch. And so her quality of life improved because she made space to let people help her. The other thing I want to say is there's this really faulty belief that injuries and illnesses are punishments. That there's this God person out there that mistreats us if we're, you know, if we misbehave. And that is nonsense. They're also not lessons, in my point of view. They're just experiences we're having. And we're having these experiences because these experiences show us something. They show us a blind spot. They show us something that we haven't been aware of before. Some piece of mystery that was hidden to us. And we allow these experiences into our lives because we want the gifts that they bring. So if an illness shows up, if an injury shows up, it's not because I'm bad. It's because I wanted to get the message from that experience. Okay, that's all I'm going to say about that. No, it's not. So I have another friend, and she used to say, she probably still does, that her mother enjoyed ill health for 40 years. Because she did. She was always sick, and she enjoyed every bit of the attention she got from it. And Pat tells a similar story of when she got sick after taking care of ill husbands for a long, long time. So we have a way of seeing our life from a different point of view when we stop taking it so personally. And we can step back and see it from a larger point of view. So here's the other part that's awkward. I don't know anybody that can actually see it when it happens. It's always hindsight. I don't know of anybody who can actually get a clear picture of their experience except in the rearview mirror. Because until some time has passed after the experience, we don't have enough perspective on it to be able to see it clearly. So let's look at that chart, that little diagram on the back of the white folded insert. You can start any place on the cycle. It's easy for me to start at the place of experience because that's rubber hits the road place. You know, that's what's going on in front of my eyes. So I have an experience. And then I make a decision. And then I create a definition in my mental dictionary about what that means. And then I am looking at the world through my lens of that perspective. And then I'm assigning meaning to that decision, definition, perception, perspective that I had. And I'll give you an example, and it's going to be absurd, because those are the easiest ones. So if I decide that people that have brown eyes are mean, for whatever reason, you know, maybe somebody with brown eyes cut me off, I don't know. But if I decide that that people that have brown eyes are mean, then I have created a circumstance where I have a definition that if you have brown eyes, that means you're mean. Which means then, if I interact with somebody with brown eyes, I am expecting them to be mean. And I am expecting them to have ill intention toward me. So then if I run across somebody with brown eyes randomly, like sitting at a bus stop, my expectation of them is that they're going to be mean. Do you see how irrational this is? And we do it all the time. We do it all the time. Now, oh yeah, so the brown-eyed person at the bus stop, if I decide that they're mean, that I'm going to see them as mean, and I'm going to feel anxious, and a little bit unnerved, and a little cautious, and a little, like, uneasy around them. And since everything is energy and vibration, what are they going to pick up? Oh yeah. They're going to pick up my discomfort, which is going to make them uncomfortable, which is then going to heighten the uncomfortable experience between us, and I made it up. Isn't that nonsense? And we do it all the time. Now, if I can stand in the place instead of gratitude, and I can see that person with brown eyes as somebody who was particularly helpful to me. I wasn't going to tell this story, but I am. So when I moved to Houston the first time, way back in Noah, my mother was worried about me moving to Houston because it was a big city and it was scary to her. because it was a big city, right? There's a definition. And I'm, you know, cool, I'm going to a big city. And so I'm driving a rental car in Houston, and I stop at Denny's for supper. And I come out, and my rental car has a flat tire. And, of course, the sun's going down because I stopped for supper. So I'm in a parking lot at a Denny's on the highway as the sun is going down in Houston, and I have a flat tire on my rental car. Okay. Well, because I know how to change tires, I opened the trunk, and I got all the gear out to change the tire. And this great, huge, massively huge black policeman comes up. If I had a story that this was scary, it wouldn't have turned out like it did. He walked up and he said, "Would you like some help?" And I said, "Yes, thank you." And I said, "Would you like me to hold the flashlight, and are you really offering to change my tire?" And he said, "Yes and yes." And faster than I could have done it, but he was faster. Faster than I could have done it, I stood there and held the flashlight, and he changed my tire. And then I'm driving back to my hotel room, and I'm going, do I tell my mother this story or not? You know, does it make her more comfortable to think of me being in this scary town with a black policeman with a giant flashlight this long? Does that make her more comfortable or less? Depends. It depends on how strong her definition is. I had a lovely time in Houston. I was there a decade. And I enjoyed every minute of it because my point of view about people is they generally are supportive, regardless of what color eyes they have, regardless of what they look like, regardless of how they show up in the world. And so my experience tends to be positive. So we can change, if we recognize we have a cycle of that doesn't work so well for us, we have the option, we have the ability, we can interrupt this cycle and give new input into the system that actually creates the circumstance that we wish. And, sorry, it's not necessarily easy. And it's not passive. We actually have to do something in our minds, change our minds, and be intentional about it to have a different experience. So there's another story. And some of you have heard this one before, so just bear with me. Yogananda, the dude who created Self-Realization Fellowship in California, was sitting with one of his mentors, and they were studying astrology. And Yogananda's sitting there studying astrology, and he's going, doggone it, you know, I don't believe astrology rules me. And the mentor looked at him and said, very good, Yogananda. It doesn't when you're awake. Boy, which means it does when you're asleep. If we are conscious and intentional with our lives, then we are not run with default thinking. However, if we are not using our intentions on purpose, we are run by default thinking. Any piece of what is commonly held as true, if we believe it and it works for us, fabulous. If it doesn't work for us and we believe it, we're getting watermelons. We have to be intentional about what we decide, what we accept, what we allow, what we believe, what we choose. And yes, it is constant work. Like my friend with the slightly sad point of view. We must be in charge if we are unhappy with our lives. If we're happy with our lives, please leave it alone. But if it's not working, realize you're the only one that has the handle. You're the only one that has the lever. You're the only one that can make the change. In one of the stories that we'll most likely use in the gratitude series that starts this Wednesday night, and it's a mystery because I haven't written it yet. It'll be like Donna said, it was great last year, it'll be great this year. One of the stories we'll probably use in the gratitude series was written by Martha Beck. And some of you will know her from the books Finding Your Own North Star or The Joy Diet, 10 Daily Practices for a Happier Life. What you don't know about Martha Beck probably is that she had a son who had Down syndrome. And before she had Adam, she was a type A personality. You know, higher, faster, stronger. Now. Succeed and accomplish at all costs. That was her before Adam. Having this child changed her life dramatically and reoriented her focus to what was actually important to her. She wrote, "It is the willingness to kill off our beliefs about what is proper and desirable, opening instead to the ever-changing and ever-surprising reality of actual experience." In realizing what was actually important to her, which was quality of life, not accomplishment, she then was able to move into her calling, which was helping herself see what mattered, and anyone else who chose to read the books that she wrote. So do you see that? It's a lovely concrete example of how we change our lives by changing our definitions of what's important. So now look at that cycle of experience again. And see if an experience pops up for you that doesn't really work for you. Some experience in your life that doesn't, give you joy. Wrap your mind around it. It's not easy. Quite often they're hidden because we don't want to see them and we don't want to know them and we don't want to become different enough to create a change. But if something pops up for you, pay attention to it. And then see if there's something that you can trace back to a decision you made that made that become a fact in your life. If you made the decision in the first place, you can make a different decision. We are at choice. We may not be working with the same toolbox or skill set, but every one of us is at choice at all times. We plant the seeds of our experience. We can plant different seeds if we don't like what we're getting. So I think I'll leave you with that thought, and I'll go ahead and I'll move into the three pieces that I'll read in closing. The first is from poet Jennifer Wellwood. Know the silence that lives at the depth of all things. Now, the dissonance of the world cannot overwhelm you. Know the radiance that shines forth as the nature of all things. Now you can face the darkness and not waver. Know the vastness that everywhere is the truth of all things. Now the small cares of your life will no longer crush you. Know yourself nakedly. Oh, that bright expanse of wakefulness. Now you are anchored in the tides of self-forgetting. And then a short piece by Emily McDowell that I posted on our Facebook page this morning. Finding yourself is not really how it works. You aren't a $10 bill left in last winter's coat pocket. You are not lost. Your true self is right here, buried under cultural conditioning, other people's opinions, and inaccurate conclusions you drew as a kid that became your beliefs about who you are. Finding yourself is actually returning to yourself, an unlearning, an excavation, a remembering who you were before the world got its hands on you. And then from J.B. Priestley, a British author and essayist from the first half of the 1900s, he wrote a book of essays about daily life simply called Delight. This is essay number 89, if you care. We are told that some Oriental visitor attending one of our symphonies for the first time was particularly delighted by what he thought was the opening piece on the program, the sound of the orchestra tuning up. But I am not sure he is wrong. Is there, in fact, anything more delightful in all the symphonies and concertos that follow this anonymous opening piece? So enormous in its promise, so cunningly anticipatory of the best of what is to come. What is it that we hear during that evening takes such hold on our imagination? It is, if you like, a chaos, this tuning up and trying the instrument out and having a go at the difficult bit of noise. But it is the chaos caught in that supreme moment immediately before creation. Everything of order and beauty, shortly to be revealed, is already there in it. Moreover, it never fails us, unlike some of the compositions that may follow. So think about your life. Think about how it works for you and how it doesn't. Adjust if necessary. No, adjust as you are willing. Because we are at choice all the time. And we are at responsibility, is the word that Shelley used. It is ours to choose to engage. Do so as you wish. Bless yourself and bless us all. Thank you. I forget I'm not wearing a headset mic. So now it's time for our closing prayer as the gang gets ready. So we pray affirmatively around here, which means we only pray for what we wish to have an experience of. So think about your life and claim some particular good, some particular joy, some particular delight. And I'll speak the words. In the whole and holiness of this day, I celebrate the awareness. I celebrate the ability to see. I celebrate the ability to know and receive and allow. Because I know the divine spirit has already given every gift. And each one has the opportunity to choose to receive. And as each chooses, the gift presents itself. It's almost like magic, but it's really just law in action. So I celebrate this mechanism, this technology, this operating system that lives, moves, and has its being as life, and as each one of us, as a piece of that. So I feel great joy in knowing this, and I feel great delight in being able to experience it personally and as a community. So I celebrate this, and I celebrate this opportunity that each one has to have a greater sense of joy, a greater sense of peace, of love, of fun, of whatever it is that brings each of us delight. Knowing this truth as an expression of what already exists, I have nothing to do but relax, allow, and let it be. And so it is.
Holy, holy way, let me love in a holy, holy way. Oh, let me love in a holy, holy way. Let me love in a holy, holy way. Oh, let me know that love is all around me.
Let me know that love is all around.
Oh, let my steps reveal a path of peace.
Let my steps reveal a path of peace.
Oh, let me love in a holy, holy way.
Oh, let me love in a holy, holy way.
Oh, let me love in a holy, holy way.
Oh, let me love in a holy, holy way.